This is your favorite blockhead here to talk to you today about my friends over at American Timelines Podcast, hosted by History for Jerks. Joe and Amy have been married for almost 20 years, and she happens to love true crime, while her partner in crime, Joe, happens to love pop culture and history, and together they combine a style preference in the true crime, history, and pop culture podcast that you cannot miss. American Timelines. They tell the murder stories, they tell what's going on during the murder, and after that, they're going to tell the stories year by year, month by month, on what's going on in all of these realms, these stories that would not have gone viral if it wasn't for the internet. Guys, you are missing out if you are not checking out my friends over at historyforjerks.com and checking out the American Timelines podcast. Anywhere you listen, whether it's Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, or any other hosting platform. I am your favorite blockhead, and I approve this message for the American Timelines podcast by historyforjerks.com. Go to my link for your favorite blockhead.com/blog. Click on the link that says History for Jerks and check out the American Timelines podcast today. Thank you for stopping by once again. You are listening to your favorite blockhead, the only podcast in the podcasting world that can somehow incorporate the Peanuts comic strip 1 minute and then be talking about MMA and warriors inside the octagon the next. And guys, I will tell you, as we get ready for this episode, we've got another special guest that's come on today. I'll tell you, because of the COVID-19 outbreak, don't want to make this sound like a blessing or a curse, but I can say that yours truly is ahead of the curve because he's had so many great guests. You can expect some more coming up in the future. They just keep on lining up. So that just means that Blockhead gets to tease your ears a little bit, but allow our guests to have the red carpet rolled out for them. So that is such a blessing. Just know, guys, if you have not gone to yourfavoriteblockhead.com/blog, that's where you're going to find all the links for today's show, all sponsor links, all links that are for social media for this particular guest. Always be checking out the blog. And also, if you do want to contribute back to yours truly, go to my Ko-fi page at ko-fi.com/yourfavoriteblockhead. That's ko-fi.com/yourfavoriteblockhead. If you watch the video, you will see how, if you contribute to the show, what you will receive in return for how many cups of coffee that you contribute to yours truly. That's a shameless plug. Anybody that never has used Ko-fi before should definitely consider it. If you are a Patreon user, that's great. Wouldn't be a bad idea to check out Ko-fi as well. All that being said, we're about to get wet and we're about to get wild because this gentleman that I have coming on the show today is actually already taking the podcasting world by storm. His show is already number 2 on Spotify for kayaking and it's number 26 for fishing and will continue to blow up across the podcasting world. Without any further ado, I give you my friend and yours, the host of the Paddler's Playbook podcast, Mr. Drew Turner. Drew, welcome to the show, my friend.
Thanks for having me on, man. It's a pleasure to get on here, talk to the Blockhead Nation, you know, talk a little bit about my podcast, you know, maybe give some stories. I kind of have a unique view on things. We've been talking before. I do wear a lot of hats. I've done a lot of things. It's not because, you know, I don't enjoy doing a whole bunch of things or I don't enjoy what I do. I really enjoy everything that I do, but man, I like to mix it up. So, you know, I have the kayaking podcast. I make my own lures. I just bought everything to make rod and reels, you know, that I got my stimulus check the other day. So, go ahead and get some new hobbies. I do the podcast. I've done a lot of stuff and I'm glad to be on here to talk about, you know, just everything that I've done in the past and you know, kind of entertain, because we'll talk about it later, but I work in healthcare, and during this whole COVID-19, everything going on, you know, doing podcasts like this and just listening to podcasts in general, this is a nice, you know, get away from that everything that goes on in work. So I'm ready to dig in. So this is going to be a little new for me because it's going to be a little new for me because I'm usually the host of the show. So I'm the one asking the questions to my guests. So this is going to be fun. I'm looking forward to this. It's going to be enjoyable to be able to be the one who's answering the questions instead of the one asking the questions.
See, there you go. The magician doesn't let you see one of the hands for a reason. So I'll say at this point, Blockhead Nation, go ahead and grab your paddles and jump in as we get into the water. Pun completely intended. So again, Drew, I'm just thankful for this chance to be able to discuss with you. But you said yourself, you not only wore a lot of hats, but you got some stories of your background. Before we even get into healthcare, you even mentioned that you have been a DJ or you've actually worked several weddings and venues. And you said you got some stories that you want to let rip. Let's let the Blockhead Nation hear it about those, my friend.
Okay, so I used to DJ. I had my own little DJing company, and the way that started out was I was in college at Texas A&M Corpus Christi. I had a friend who DJed at a club. So he was feeling under the weather during one of his sets, so I took over for him. Well, after I took over for him, I mean, I did it for probably 3 or 4 hours that night. And when I say he was feeling under the weather, he drank way too much and he was, you know, pretty hungover. So sure. I took over for him there. And at the end of the set, the owner of the club was like, "Hey man, we really liked what you were doing. You should come back." So I talked to my buddy a little bit and he let me go, you know, quote unquote, fill in whenever he wasn't feeling well. Which you guys know how it is in college sometimes on the weekends. You're not feeling well or you have a date or you have something like that. So I filled in for him. I did that a few times. And then I talked to my dad, and being a broke college kid eating 99-cent corn dogs all the time, I did not have enough, you know, I did not have enough money to buy some DJ equipment because I was like, I was going to be the next DJ. I was going to be the next, you know, premier company across South Texas. So I called my dad. I did some pricing. He loaned me $1,200. I bought, you know, just the basic equipment, and I got into doing fraternity and sorority parties. So I did the frat and sorority parties with my $1,200. I made my money back. I mean, you can charge $300-$400 a night back then, and this was in, and I say back then, it's not like it was that long ago. This was back in 2003, 2004.
Sure.
For these parties, and they would all come together and pay. So I did a bunch of sorority and fraternity parties. I moved to Huntsville, to Sam Houston State from A&M Corpus Christi, and I got in with the same frat and sorority there. Well, you know, fast forward 2 years after doing frat parties and sorority parties and things like that, and the sorority girls started getting married. Right. So, you know, who's the DJ that they know? The guy that's been doing all their parties. Yeah, and it's not a bad gig doing sorority parties. I will tell you that. It's not too bad. So they would start getting married, so I started doing the weddings for them. And, you know, that kind of progressed. And the reason I'm telling this whole story like this is just the progression of this and the way it happened is kind of weird.
Sure.
but it's something that everybody can follow along with. If you can always start somewhere, no matter where you start, and then you can end up somewhere else. So I did the weddings and stuff like that. Well, then some of these fraternity and sororities, they, you know, I DJed the parties, then I DJed their weddings. Well, some of them got into being event planners. Some of them got into being with, you know, the city of Huntsville, the city of Conroe in some kind of capacity. So when they needed a DJ for an event, they would call me because I'm the only DJ that they would know. So I did
a lot of competition on your end.
No, I mean, there's not a lot of competition, especially if you can get in with, you know, people within the city and stuff like that. So for a lot of city of Conroe events, I would either set everything up when they needed a PA system, or they would have event openings. The worst, I know people always want to hear about the funnest part and the coolest part, but I want to tell you the worst event that I ever had to DJ.
Oh, you have the Blockhead Nation's attention.
The city of Huntsville opened up a new section of the library in Huntsville. And this was a 12-hour gig. And
oh, wow.
I was charging $125 an hour. So you can imagine a 12-hour gig at $125 an hour, I'm seeing dollar signs. You know, indeed. I'm 23, 24, and this is just a side gig, and I'm seeing the dollar signs, and I'm like, yeah, this is going to be good. So I set everything up. I get there for the opening. It's a children's section of the library, so I'm setting stuff up and playing music. My age demographic that was there is 4 to 8-year-olds. So I'm playing Do Your Ears Hang Low. I'm playing, yeah, you know, all these children's songs for 12 hours. 12 hours. I put on, like, boy, you guys remember the Wow CDs?
Yes.
They had, you know, or that, no, now, that's what I call music. And
yeah,
all
that's
that
what
CDs.
I call music, yeah.
So I thought that was going to be, yeah, I thought that was going to be okay until some of the songs started playing on him, and I'm like, dang it, I can't play that, because I would get the side eye from some of the parents every once in a while because of some of the language in there. So
right.
I thought I could get away with that. Man, it is very, very difficult to play music for 5 to 10-year-olds for 12 hours. So, and this is, I'm not joking. After about 5 hours, and I had to go to the clown that was making balloon animals to ask him if they had any more CDs so I could play some different music, because I was going crazy playing the stuff that I had. So no joke, I had to borrow music from the clown. So that was probably the worst experience I had DJing. That I made the most money DJing that event, but gosh, that was horrible, man.
People, you earned your paycheck on that one, man.
Exactly. I mean, people think it's all sometimes, you know, everybody's out dancing, you're having fun, you know, everybody's, you're behind the stuff, you're hitting the wheels, you're mixing, you're spinning, you know, that is all great, and that happens every once in a while, but there's more events like the library that you get paid to do than there is the really fun ones that they glamorize on TV and things like that. So that was my worst experience as far as having my own DJ company. But, you know, I got out of the DJing business once I got married and then my son was born, because DJing is fun and it's really good money. But you spend a lot of your time doing, you know, being at other people's events and not really making your own memories and things like that with your family and your friends, because you're working on the weekends.
Yeah.
So once I got married and my son was born, actually the last thing that I quote unquote DJed, I had my brother run my setup at my wedding to save on some cash, but also after that, I sold all my equipment. And I haven't DJed since. I miss it. My co-host on the Paddler's Playbook, my podcast, he still DJs every now and then. It's funny, he just DJed a cheerleading convention, and he said that was pretty brutal to sit through that with 13 and 14-year-old cheerleaders. So me and him both DJ, we have that in common, but man, it's a lot of work, and it takes up a lot of your time for anybody that's thinking about getting into doing events and stuff like that. It's difficult to do, but I love it whenever I do.
Yeah, there's a little behind the scenes with DJing 101 right there, Blockhead Nation, just in case you wanted to put that on your portfolio down the road. At least you've been forewarned on this one. I love it. Can I mention something now that before, since you're getting into your family and all that, and the time that you trained in MMA, or when you actually did a few articles for the online MMA magazine that you did, is that before you got married? Is that one after? Could you walk us maybe through that a little bit? Because that one really piqued my interest when we discussed this a while back.
Yeah, so that was after I got married, after I got done DJing. And
okay.
I've always wanted to, you know, have some type of creative outlet. And
sure,
I haven't really been able to figure out what that creative outlet is and what I was really good at until now. with the kayak fishing and stuff, there's a lot of people that do that on YouTube. They make videos. You know, some of my really good friends are very popular. I'm talking about like 2-3 million views per video. Like,
oh, wow.
they do it full time. They do it full time on YouTube. So I tried that and I wasn't very good at it. So I always wanted a creative outlet, and I loved MMA. I loved jiu-jitsu. I love things like that. So this was back, I don't know, this must have been 10 years ago, 12 years ago. MMA was just really starting to get a little bit more mainstream, you know, not to the point it is now. I mean, you still had people calling it bar fights and things like that.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, this was back in the Tough One days. Mm-hmm. You know, this was back in the Tito and Chuck days and things like that. So back then, blogs were the, you know, blogs were like podcasts are now. So exactly. Everybody wanted to do a blog, and everybody thought that they could do a blog, and that included me. So I started doing a blog, and it was called Mr. MMA Man. And I don't even know, I don't even think it's still available anywhere. Like I said, that was 12 years ago, but it was Mr. MMA Man. And I would just write about events that were coming up. Well, I went to a local show, and I met a guy. I don't know if anybody's around the Houston area, but Legacy Fighting Championships used to be based out of Houston.
Yes,
Mick Maynard. Yeah, Mick Maynard, who is actually the one of the matchmakers for the UFC right now, he was the president of, you know, LFA. And this was before, you know, this was, like I said, this was probably 2010. So
sure.
The Black Beast, I went to one of the Black Beast fight because he's from Houston.
Yeah.
And I went there.
Derek
and
Lewis.
Derek Lewis. He's one of my favorite fighters, too. He's an awesome interview. I wait for his interviews afterwards, man, because they're great. And he's been like that. He's been like that since, you know, whenever he was fighting on the local scene, whenever they would do the interviews after him, because they fought in Houston. So I would go to as many fights as I could because it was only $30 and there was no bad seat in the arena theater. There's not a bad seat in there. But I got to sit second row one day, and the owner of Texas MMA Fighting was there, which is a Texas-based website. And me and him got to talking and everything, and I told him I had a blog. So he said he would check it out, and I didn't think I would hear anything from him. So he sends me an email back probably about 2 weeks later. He's like, hey, man, I like your blog. He's like, I want to get you on the website, but I'm trying to figure out how we can, like, do this. So I said, well, there's an event coming up next week. Why don't we do a expert versus a blogger, and me and you write a little article about who we think's going to win the fight and, you know, why we think they're going to win, and then we'll tally it up at the end, you know, and see who wins. You know, we'll put it on before, and then we'll put the scores on after and just see how that goes. So I did that. We probably did, you know, probably 10 events where we just went back and forth, and it was expert versus blogger. So that was really, really – it was really fun doing that. I really enjoyed it. It was a creative outlet. As you can probably tell by, you know, the way I talk on here too, though, my grammar isn't great, so I always have to have somebody edit my writing for me. So writing isn't really my – you know, I'm
forte.
It's not my forte. It's not that I would be really good on a writing team. How about that?
Sure.
I would be good with, you know, getting the concepts together and getting the format together and, you know, what we want to do.
Yeah,
but the actual structure of it, I will never be an editor. I will never be anything like that. That's just not me. And that goes the same for my podcast. I do the same there. I put together the format of the episode, and then we go through everything. But going back to the blog, so I did that with him, and then I was also training during that time too. So I didn't think I was ever going to be a fighter. You know, I didn't have aspirations of being in the UFC or anything like that. I just wanted to better understand what I was watching, what I was writing about, and it was something physical that I could do. So I went and I started doing jujitsu, and I started doing Muay Thai and kickboxing and wrestling. And there's a gym up here in Conroe that I went to that offered classes where it was just you did the jujitsu class, and then they had a MMA class afterwards where you did Muay Thai, you did wrestling, you did all that. So I did that for about a year. Well, I kept rolling with the same guy because we were about the same weight class, and he's I don't know if he's still fighting, but I know he had some pro fights. But I kept rolling with him, and he would always hit me every single time in my left ear. Every time he would rub across on my left ear. So at this time too, my son, just a sidebar that's kind of going to roll into it, my son was 6, I believe. So we kept rolling. Well, I started to develop on the inside of my left ear, cauliflower ear. Yeah. And I know a lot of people who watch MMA know what cauliflower is. They see the wrestler's ears. They see, you know, a lot of the fighter's ears. And mine's not that bad. Mine is actually on the inner lobe instead of the outer lobe. So yeah, you can't really tell unless I tell you. But the whole inner lobe is almost closed right now and very hard from the cauliflower ear. I can't even wear earbuds. So you guys can't see me, but I have the big headphones on doing this interview.
Yeah,
I can't wear earbuds. I literally can't wear earbuds because I can't fit it inside my ear canal. So I started getting that, and that hurts. Cauliflower ear, whenever you're first developing it, it hurts a lot. As soon as you touch it, it really, 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 really stings. And my machismo would not allow me to wear headgear to practice. So I thought, you know, I'm just going to take a break. I'm going to take a break. I'm going to let this heal up. I'm not going to go back to practice for a while. I'm just going to take a break for a month. And I ended up never going back.
Oh,
because,
wow.
Because my son, who was 6 at the time, was like, "Dad, I want to do jujitsu. Can I do jujitsu?" And I was like, "Sure." And then it just became a cost because, you know, training MMA and jujitsu isn't cheap.
No.
And so, yeah, so we couldn't afford for both of us to go. So it was more important for him to learn at, you know, 6 to me than me at, you know, at 30. So
sure.
He started going, and although I still have, you know, 3 punching bags in my garage, I still like to wrestle around and stuff. I haven't trained since then, but my son has stayed doing jiu-jitsu, and he really enjoys it. So that's my forte into MMA and blogging and you know, having my blog and stuff like that.
Well, that was still a pretty good fun ride for us to take, bud, because one, I can understand the expert versus the blogging is just a fabulous idea to be able to do, but also at the same time, you train in it, one, not only to get physically fit, do one that you like, but, you know, that added the extra color to your blog while you were getting to it, and it gave you a lot more understanding of the ins and outs of the sport. So I love that, and also just for you choosing it for your son. I mean, that again, I enjoyed that little trip that we just took down there. And I love the fact that Derek Lewis has not changed his colors after all these years. He's still the same guy that he was in LFA on to the UFC.
Exact same guy, man. Exact same guy. Still tired after 2 rounds. Still, you know, acting crazy. Still all knock-kneed, walking through the ring, like all that stuff. Same celebration, same everything. It was pretty cool to see him as he grew through the sport. And, you know, now he's one of my favorite fighters that I have to watch all the time. Every time he has a fight, I got to make sure I tune in for those fights.
You're definitely not the only one. I love it.
This episode of the show is sponsored by Fruit of the Bean Coffee, the online coffee producer that not only will satisfy your morning craving for a delicious fresh brew of morning coffee from countries like Costa Rica,
Kenya, and other South American countries, but is also changing the world for the better with a 10% give back policy. That means when you purchase your whole or ground roast coffee, your t-shirts or coffee mugs from Fruit of the Bean, you are also contributing to charities that Fruit of the Bean cherishes, such as the Christian Alliance for Orphans, Project Rescue, and others. Check out the link at yourfavoriteblockhead.com/blog and click on the Fruit of the Bean link to learn more about how you, the Blockhead Nation, can drink coffee and do good. That's fruitofthebean.com.
Guys, once again, thank you once again for tuning in to Your Favorite Blockhead this afternoon. Our scripture of the day is going to come from Ephesians chapter 4, verses 1 through 3. The Apostle Paul says, "As a prisoner for the Lord, then I urge you to live a life worthy of the calling you have received. Be completely humble and gentle. Be patient, bearing with one another in love. Make every effort to keep the unity of the Spirit through the bond of peace." And as I continue to talk to you, Drew, once again, I'm so thankful you came on, but also I really have to mention that you work very closely with people. This scripture is even relevant to you because you work very closely with people in healthcare. You work a therapy department at the nursing home. What can you walk us through that somebody who's been on the inside working with patients during this whole COVID-19 outbreak? What can we expect? What have you seen? What do people need to know at this point?
Man, it's been very rough for me at work. Like you just said, I run a therapy department at a nursing home, and the geriatric population is the most susceptible to COVID-19 right now. And yes, especially people who are living in a nursing home, they already have some comorbidities. They already have some issues that they're dealing with that make them even more susceptible. So it's been very difficult. It's been rough, especially with the stay-at-home orders and things like that, where people are really wanting to get out of their house. They're wanting to go to work. They're wanting to do all these things. It's been rough for me because I literally go to work, come home, that's it. Like I try my best to even, you know, I stay out of the grocery store as much as I can. We don't go to Walmart. We don't go everywhere because the last thing that I want to do as a healthcare professional is to contract COVID-19 by going to some of these places and then bringing it into my facility. I don't want that on my conscience. I don't want to deal with that. I want to try to stay away from any opportunity for me to become infected with COVID-19, because even though it might not affect me, I may not have any symptoms, I may be asymptomatic, the folks that I work with are the ones that could really potentially harm. And I don't want this to sound like a PSA or, you know, tell anybody how to live their life or what they should be doing, but I know there's a lot of people not working. And financially, that's going to be hard for them. They're not working right now. They're not bringing in a paycheck. I know I talked about the stimulus check earlier. There's people that, you know, that stimulus check is just a drop in the bucket for the bills and everything that they have. They're ready to get back to work.
Right.
I do have empathy for those people. I have empathy for that. But on the same token, those people that aren't taking this serious, that are still going out, that are still congregating, that are still having big barbecues and being around people, I don't think they really understand the impact they could have on what's going on in, you know, healthcare facilities and things like that, because someone who currently has COVID-19, they're asymptomatic. They don't even know it. They're going to a party or they're going to a crawfish boil, because I've seen this a few times, a fish fry, a crawfish boil or something like that with friends, and everybody's asymptomatic and healthy because they're in their 20s and 30s. They transmit it on to the next person. That person goes and gets gas at the gas station where I get gas at.
Right.
And they infect the pump handle, and I come back behind them and touch the pump handle on my way to work, I could potentially infect the people at work. So, sure. I mean, it's a big cycle that can keep running. And I understand people want to get out and they want to go do stuff. But us that work in the healthcare facilities, you know, we have to be extra careful with everything. my facility, we have to have our temperature taken and we have to fill out a questionnaire every single day when we come into work.
Oh, wow.
And that's still, yes. And that's anybody that comes into our building. If you're a delivery man dropping off stuff for the Coke machine, you have to fill out a questionnaire. If you've been in contact with anybody that's had COVID-19, you can't come in. They take your temperature, and that's just to deliver Cokes upstairs. That's not even to touch anything. So that's how serious, you know, this virus is right now.
Sure.
And it's been rough, man. It's been rough. Luckily, we haven't seen any cases in my facility or any surrounding facilities, but we're taking extra precautions. I will say this too. This is going to sound like a PSA now. So you guys that are, wear your mask. First of all, wear your mask if you have them, which is great. But don't hoard your mask, because there are people working in the emergency rooms, working in the hospitals, working in nursing homes that need the mask, and we can't even go buy any right now because other people have hoarded them up. So use your mask, limit the amount of mask wear that you have to have, because do you really need to go to Hobby Lobby to buy new craft stuff and, you know, buy some masks for that? Or do you really need to go to HEB for no reason to go pick up, you know, one jar of mayonnaise? Like, is that essential for you to go out? So really think about that. But these people that are wearing gloves around 24/7, mm-hmm. I understand you think you're protecting yourself, but really all you're doing is, if you get the virus on those gloves, you're just spreading it for every single thing that you touch. Everything that you touch is living on those gloves still. So if you can keep from wearing your gloves at the grocery store and running your hands over everything, and you're just worried about you being protected, you're like, well, I'm protected because I have my gloves on. Well, you're touching everything else with contaminated gloves. Everything right. that you touch is contaminated now because you're touching it with potentially contaminated gloves. So please don't wear your gloves every single place that you go to. I would suggest wearing gloves at the gas pumps. Just a glove on your one hand that you're touching everything with, and then throw it away. But you know, it's been rough. It's been very, very different. Thank God I'm still working and I get to work, but with everything going on, it's been rough. No outside vendors can come into the facility. All my part-timers, if you work at another facility and in healthcare, there's a lot of people who work, they call it PRN. So they'll work at one place for 3 days a week, and then they'll work at another place for 2 days a week. Well, at a lot of places, that's been shut down. If your primary facility that you work at, you work there and you can't work anywhere else. So I can't have any of my part-timers come in that work at other places. So we've been seeing, you know, more hours for us, but it's been difficult, man. It's different than I've ever seen and I've ever experienced. And I hope I don't have to experience this again, but you know, we'll see how everything shakes out. I hope this doesn't set a precedence for every new virus that comes out. I hope that I don't want to say better prepared, but I hope the nation and the healthcare systems see the need for PPE and personal protective equipment storage for the future. And I think that's what's going to happen, is we're going to see a big uptick in a stockpile of PPE for the next time this happens for different facilities and things like that. So this is going to be, I think, a good thing and a bad thing for the healthcare industry, because it's going to help us prepare for when it happens again, because I'm sure going forward, it's going to happen again with something new. There'll be something new that we have to deal with.
Right. I mean, there's always going to be some type of epidemic. This is just, has become a unique one in how long we've been in seclusion. But still, you know what? I thank you for that insight there, Drew. I appreciate that. I was all for the PSA announcement. I'm going, hey, man, you need to let it rip. We need to hear it on our side. If the Blockhead Nation heeds it, then something was done right. But if more people can get that same word out there, then that's what we need to be doing. So thank you for fighting the good fight every single day. We appreciate that insight. We really do. But Laz, I'll tell you that we have – the Blockhead Nation's been sitting here with their paddles ready to get into the water, all pun intended, because we really are anxious to know now, even with the PSA announcement, can we get into what your podcast is all about from the beginning, where you are now at this point? Let's open up those milk crates like you did on those last episode you just did. Let's hear it, my friend.
Absolutely, man. We can talk about fishing. Fishing's an essential activity right now. So everybody can still go fishing. They can still go kayaking. They can get out on the water. Our podcast, The Paddler's Playbook, we notice, me and my co-host, Chris Lewis, we notice that there are always the same questions that come into the Facebook groups about the same things over and over and over. And you know, like I said earlier, I always wanted to start something to get my creative juices flowing, whether it was DJing or the MMA blog or making lures or doing something, you know. So we've been thinking about doing a podcast, and I don't want to sound arrogant or anything right now, but there are a lot of kayak fishing podcasts out there, and when I listen to them, I was not extremely entertained by the quality of the podcast.
Sure.
The content was pretty good in most portions of it, but if you've been around a fisherman and you, I mean, everybody knows about the fish stories and fisherman tales and the buddies that are just talking amongst themselves over a beer and things like that. There is a segment of people who enjoy that. They like that. That's what they want to hear. They want to hear, you know, two guys maybe talking about their weekend, two weekends ago where they went fishing with their buddy Blue and they caught this and they caught that. And, you know, just kind of BSing about everything going on. I don't feel like that is the type of podcast that I would want to listen to. I'm always wanting to learn something new. I'm wanting to further my knowledge on a subject. I'm wanting to, you know, learn some new information. I'm always wanting to be a lifetime learner, and that's something working in healthcare that they always instill in you from the very beginning is to be a lifetime learner. But indeed, I'm always wanting to learn something new. So whenever we were talking about doing a podcast, we thought, you know, hey, if we do a podcast, we don't want to do it the same as a lot of the other guys that are out there, you know, just talking back and forth. If we do one, I want to be able to teach people different aspects of kayaking and fishing from our experience doing it. I want it to be a more informative podcast than an entertaining one. But we can mix in the entertainment.
Exactly.
Me and my co-host are both ex-DJs. So we're able to, you know when to make jokes. And, you know, we're both very much people. I mean, we're people persons. So we kind of know when to throw stuff in, when to joke around, know when things are getting a little monotonous. So we always try to keep it entertaining, but the main focus of the podcast is to teach you something that you didn't know before. And we want every episode to be like that. We want to ask follow-up questions to our guest that a beginner might ask or a more experienced person might ask, because we want to give our listeners everything that they want to learn about or hear about. So although there are some listeners of ours that they love whenever we're joking around, and you know, they love to hear the stories of our last fishing trip, and we love for them to tune in, but we're more geared towards teaching someone giving them information to enjoy their time out on the water. And you'll hear that a lot in the podcast is we just want people to enjoy the outdoors. We want them to get out. We want them to get their kids out. We want them to get their brothers out. We want them to get out of the house, away from the TVs, away from the tablets, and just get outdoors and do stuff in nature. We're meant to be outside. You know, we're meant to be out there hunting, gathering, planting, cultivating. That's what we're meant to do. And I think, you know, I'm not one of those people that think that kids shouldn't be on a tablet at all. I think that they need to know this technology. They need to know how to work the laptop. They need to know how to work applications. They need to know how to work all this stuff. Like they need to have a good balance though. You know, there's a meme that always goes around the fishing community that's like, we need more tackle boxes and less Xboxes. Well, Xboxes are good for hand-eye coordination. I mean, I played old school yeah. Nintendo. I played Techno Bowl growing up. I played RBI Baseball on the Nintendo and Mario Kart on the Super Nintendo and everything else. We played all that, but yeah. We also got outside more. I mean, I can remember spending an hour and a half in fifth and sixth grade playing Oregon Trail. So it's yeah. No different. It's no different than my son on his tablet, you know, for an hour and a half, you know, playing whatever the newest game is on there than when I was a kid. So I don't think we're spending that much more time on with technology. I just think that we're spending less time outdoors and doing things.
Agreed.
We want to push people outdoors, and the way that we can help them is by teaching them about fishing, about teaching them about kayaks, and because the more that they get out and do that stuff and the more knowledge they have, the more they're going to enjoy it and the more that they're going to get out and do it. And that's our main thing is just to give people enough information from our experiences when it's been horrible for us to tell them, you may not want to do this, but it's much more enjoyable if you do that.
I mean, honestly, it must be
because they're going to get out more.
Yeah. I mean, obviously it must be you must be doing something right. Cause I've listened to your episodes. You do have the heart of a teacher. If you go back and listen to the other episodes, y'all are definitely a solution to the problem for kayakers and fishers. Otherwise you wouldn't be rising the ranks the way that you are on Spotify nowadays. But now it's just a matter of let's see this thing blow up over the internet. That's the big thing that needs to happen now that, you know, you've met the Blockhead Nation. We're definitely going to help you move in that direction at this point.
Yeah, man, we look forward to it. I hope we can have some carryover listeners. The first, you know, the first few episodes of the podcast, we purposely did it for the beginners. If you're just wanting to get into kayaking or you're just wanting to get into fishing, it's mainly centered over Texas Gulf Coast, Louisiana, Florida, you know, the Gulf Coast region, because that's where our knowledge base is. But as far as the kayaking portion of it, you can take that anywhere. And true. Guys, let me talk about kayaking for just a second. A lot of people get very intimidated by kayaking because their first experience and what they think of is when they were 12 or 13 and they were at some kind of summer camp or a friend's house on the river or somebody that had a pond and they got into a canoe with somebody and tossed and turned and flipped and couldn't paddle that thing. And it was a horrible experience when they were a kid, or they rented a kayak whenever they were on a vacation somewhere. And it was one of these very, very cheap, very, very skinny kayaks that are the fleet kayaks, and they were just scared to death while they were on it. They didn't want to fall in. They have these huge bulky life jackets about to choke them while they're trying to paddle. And they are a little bit intimidated by the kayak fishing or just kayaking in general. But, you know, Blockhead Nation, let me tell you, there are very comfortable kayaks that are very stable out there for you guys to go out in. I am not by any means a small, skinny man. I'm, you know, 5'8", 245 pounds. I'm not a little guy. And I kayak and kayak fish, you know, very, very comfortably for the equipment that's out there now. So if you had a bad experience from being in this little bitty yellow kayak on vacation in Cozumel and you didn't enjoy it at all, give it another chance with a, you know, some better equipment. You can rent, you know, nicer kayaks now. We have a sponsor on the show, which is what I think is the best kayak retailer in the nation. And it's also one of the biggest kayak retailers in the nation. Austin Canoe and Kayak. It's a Texas-based company. They have 5 different stores. They have 2 in Houston, San Antonio, New Brunswick, and Austin. So, but they have a big online retailer. I have a good friend who's a manager at one of the stores, and I was talking to him yesterday, and they shipped a kayak to South Dakota the other day. They shipped one to Pennsylvania. They're a great company to work with, but if you get on their website, just go look at the kayaks that are available now to try and available now to buy. They are not those skinny, you know, bright yellow kayaks that you've been in before. And it's very enjoyable to get out on there, and it's peaceful if you can find the right place to get away from the boaters, which, you know, we can help you with that as well. But don't be intimidated to get back into kayaking, to try kayak fishing again. It's the equipment and the technology has increased so much over the last 15 years that it'll blow your mind right now.
Awesome. And I guarantee you that we're going to make sure that we connect that company and also everything that you got for social media. All of your links are going to be available on the blog, my friend. I think you've hit everything on the nail on the head on everything that we've covered at this point. The only thing I would ask as we sort of wrap this up, again, make sure y'all check out yourfavoriteblockhead.com/blog, where we can see all the links that we talked about today, including the sponsors. Is there one thing that you can send us off with, Drew, that you would want the Blockhead Nation to know other than what you shared about kayaking experiences, give it another chance? Is there something you want the listeners to take away from this episode today?
I think the biggest thing to take away from this episode and my stories that I've told and shared with you guys is it's okay to wear a lot of hats. It's okay to try a little of this. It's okay to try a little of that. But if you do try some of that stuff, try to put your whole effort into it. Try to think about and engage whatever you're doing. And try to do just that for a certain period of time, per se. Like whenever I did my blog, I would just do my blog and I would concentrate on my blog while I was doing it. Same thing with the podcast. Whenever I'm doing my podcast, I try not to be distracted by anything else. Whenever I'm making lures, I try not to be distracted by everything else. We all need some kind of creative outlet. We're creative creatures by nature. I mean, you can look at the cave drawings from thousands of years ago. We were always trying to make something. We were always trying to do art. We were always making songs. We were always making beats. We were always making tools. We're always trying to create something. So don't limit yourself on things that you want to try. Try to do everything. But when you try to do something, give it your full effort to see if that's really going to be the thing for you. You know, don't halfway do something and say, that wasn't my thing. Well, you know, put your whole effort into it. And then if it's not your thing, you can honestly say, that wasn't my thing. Like writing, I know for sure writing is not my thing. You know, I did it. I gave it all my effort. It's not my thing. But this podcasting thing, I feel good about it. Like you said before, the podcast, the Paddler's Playbook, is really growing. I don't want to sound braggadocious or anything, but like you said earlier, if you search kayak, we're the number 2 one that comes up. And we've only been doing the podcast since February. And we're already the number two for downloads and stuff. So
that's an accomplishment in itself, buddy. I mean, and the numbers lie. So
yeah, it's awesome, but we're putting in the work too. You know, we have our Facebook page. We have a group. We're making sure we're engaging with the listeners because we want them to learn. And, you know, that kind of dovetails into try everything that you want to try, but put all your effort into it. And once you do figure out something that you like, you know, really engage with either your listeners or your customers, or, you know, really engage with the art or the creativity or whoever's going to be consuming it. Even if nobody's consuming it, you can't really engage with nobody if you're an artist, as far as if you're not trying to sell anything. But you can engage with other artists on their motives and why they're doing stuff to kind of help yourself grow. And me and Chris on the podcast and on the website and stuff, we're growing every time someone asks us a question. We have the information stuffed away back there, but we wouldn't even think about or talk about some of the topics if we didn't engage with our listeners. So engage with your listeners, engage with your customers, conversate, talk to people. I say this at work all the time, and I tell my therapist all the time, if you want a patient to trust you, engage with them. Ask them what they used to do for a living. You know, be a people person. Talk to them. It's amazing the stuff that people can find out if they just talk and ask questions. Just talk and ask questions. Most people like to talk. So, you know, be engaging with everything that you do in the grocery store. Talk to people, ask questions, just, you know, be engaging. And that's the big takeaway I think people should take from this episode is try everything that you want to try. Put all your heart into everything that you do and engage people about what you're interested in. If you stick by those three things, your creative outlet, whatever you're trying to accomplish through that outlet will come into fruition one way or another. It may not be what you initially thought it was going to be. You know, your goal may be something completely different than you thought it was going to be in the first place. And that's okay. But if you didn't engage and you didn't talk to people, you would never know. And if you didn't try it in the first place, you would never know what it could become. So just, you know, get out and do. Be a doer. If you guys listen to the podcast, we have Rex DeGuzman that's on there. You guys check him out on Facebook. And check him out on YouTube. He's got a company called Fresh Fish and Live Live. And one of his shirts that I have from probably 10 years ago, and I still have it and I still wear it, all it says on the front is do. That's it. Do. Be a doer. Get out and do something. Like, get off your butt and go do something. Whatever it is, go do it. Quit thinking about it. Get out of the house. Get off the couch. Go do. And I think that's what people should get out and make happen, man. I mean, just make it happen.
I don't think we could have had any other loose ends that weren't connected with that last one, guys. He was spitting some truth today, too, out here on the water. So I will tell you, again, Drew, welcome to the Blockhead Nation. Just know that your favorite Blockhead is going to be sharing the Paddler's Playbook podcast and sharing it often. Everybody that's tuned in today, once again, all of the social media links and all the sponsors that were mentioned in this show will be available to be able to click on at yourfavoriteblockhead.com/blog. Even though I don't do a whole lot of writing, that's where you guys can go to see the links, see the notes, see the audio that's uninterrupted. All of it will be available for you guys. And just once again, thank you again, Drew from Paddler's Playbook, for coming on today. And I bid you adieu, my friend.
Thank you for having me on. It was a pleasure to talk with you and to engage with the Blockhead Nation. I really appreciate the opportunity to just come on and talk, because as you guys could probably tell from this episode, I like to talk.
That's okay. And as Michael Bisping and other MMA fighters have said, we'll run it back one day. But until the time that he returns, guys, be sure and check out every Saturday to your favorite Blockhead and take a listen to the podcast. And we will see you next week. Same Blockhead time, same Blockhead channel.